Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you, Veronica. By the way, what do you say the current temperature is?
It is 41 with some light rain.
42 at the lake.
Not
foggy,
too bad.
Foggy, rainy today, tonight, tomorrow, 30s. I guess that's... This is the big dividing point this holiday, right? Is that better than snow? Would you have preferred it to be a couple of inches of snow on the ground this morning?
Well, I think I'm like everyone. It's pretty, but if you have to drive in it, no. Leave it somewhere else.
We woke in Minnesota today to 2 inches of snow on the ground. Missed it by a day. Just missed it by a day. I want it there for Christmas, and then it could be gone. You remember how bad last winter was. I have family and friends in Chicago and Minneapolis, and Chicago's winter last year was worse than it was in Minnesota. It was brutal. It was just brutal. So I suppose you and everybody else are all saying, we'll take this as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I went for a walk yesterday afternoon on Christmas, and it was, you know, I kept just marveling at how nice it was.
What was the highlight of your Christmas?
The kids being around, we always play board games and we get really silly. We play word games and, you know, that's kind of a tradition in our house is we'll play board games until everybody's about ready to, you know, keel over from exhaustion. But
we have a family that we celebrate a lot of holidays with and they're always into their games. So even though we might not be into the games so much, we know the MBs are going to bring them. And we all go along and it's always fun once we get doing it, you know, but it would just be so easier to just sit there and let your eyes roll into the back of your head and, you know,
well, here's how to do it. This is what I do to get everybody to always agree to play without any question.
Yeah.
I put prizes together.
Oh, nice.
And some of them are gag gifts and some of them are actually nice prizes, but they're little, you know, there's a little special tree where all the game prizes are.
Well, this was the game that we had this year, and it did have a prize. So the MBs showed up with, you know, they brought their cookies and dessert and risotto and whatever that they were bringing to the dinner at our house on Christmas Eve night. But then they also have a few boxed games, and that's the drill. And one of them, though, was unique, and it's the one we played. And it went like this. It was a wrapped box about the size of a shoebox. And whoever was able to get the prize out of the box won what was in there. And it was a gift card to a bookstore. We didn't know that. We just knew there was a prize. And here's how it works. You answer a trivia question. They would ask a trivia question to the group. And whoever got the answer right first would then put on two oven mitts. And they would have to start to unwrap the box. You get 30 seconds in your turn to unwrap the box. It's hard to unwrap a box with oven mitts on, particularly if it's been taped a lot. And so when we finally, so you have a few rounds where somebody gets a question right. You can use any, you can throw it, you can kick it, you can bite it. And finally, somebody was able to get the wrapping paper off and open up the box, only to see inside there's another box that's more meticulously wrapped and sealed. And so you go several rounds of people finally getting into the, it's like nesting Santas. You finally get down to the very smallest little shrink-wrapped item and found the gift card. So you play trivia, and it's pretty hilarious to see people that are trying to unwrap things with oven mitts on. They're using forks, biting. My friend Gary took his socks off and tried to manipulate it with his toes because at least those weren't conflicted with the oven mitts. So that was kind of a fun game for us. Although we had to look at Gary's toes and that wasn't so pleasant.
You know, it sounds like my family because we always have, you know, one package that always just has way too much tape, packages inside of packages. Usually yeah. It always went to my mother just to, you know, torture her a little bit and have some fun with her, but...
Well, here we are. So we hope that your Christmas was good on the show today. We'll play back part of our conversation, which has become our routine on Saturdays of The Mincing Rascals. That's a podcast that we record each week with Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie, the editorialist and column writers for the Chicago Tribune. And they were talking about a lot of things with us. You can hear that right now if you download our app. If you just subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes, you can also check it out on my Facebook page each weekend. That's King John on Facebook. And a lot of the conversation was about Ted Cruz and the editorial cartoon about his family, among other things. And that's something that we'll play back in part around 1:30. At my house this Christmas, I got a Shinola watch, that Detroit-made fancy watch. I was really surprised by that. I got my wife, Brenda, some earrings and some cologne. I don't think she was surprised. The boys, we decided we weren't going to overspend on this year, and so we absolutely overspent on them. And then we had that big dinner that we were talking about. Everybody sat around, and we had some prime rib roast and salads and things like that. It was really good. We had a couple of cocktails at our event this year on Christmas Eve at our house. One was called the Sleigh Ride. It's one part bourbon to one half part simple syrup that's infused with sage. It's easier to do than it sounds. Then you serve that on the rocks with some fresh cranberries as a garnish and a splash of club soda. Ooh, that's good. We also did a punch, which is a can of limeade, a can of orange juice, a bottle of cranberry juice, a bottle of Southern Comfort. Stir that up and pour it into a little cup, and that's really yummy, too. So we had our big dinner. There were three main families there, each of them missing an adult child who had other commitments and couldn't be at the dinner, and we were all sad that they couldn't be there. And then we played our game, and then the families all went away. And one of our friends stayed later, and that was a lady named Kathy. So it was Kathy, my one son who was able to join us, Griffin, Brenda, me, and the dogs. And when everybody left and we sort of quieted down, we then did what probably everybody has done this holiday season when they gathered with their family and friends at Christmas. At some point, you said, okay, let's talk about Donald Trump. And you didn't want to give the holiday dinner to that conversation. I mean, everybody's there and it's fun. And, you know, you could talk about anything. You could talk about Christmas. You could talk about the Chicago Bears or the Bulls or the Cubs. You could talk about what you've been doing. Kids have been away to school, whatever it was. You could do all of that, and that's all good, fun conversation. Or you could do that other one, which is sort of in your back pocket itching. It's being asked to be talked about. Everybody's been talking about it and thinking about it and consuming it. And now that you're all gathered there, at some point, somebody you know is going to roll out the, so, what do you think about this Trump thing? And you can do that. But for most families, it would be such an animated and hostile and hateful conversation that the Christmas dinner table doesn't seem like the right place to have that conversation. And so when they all left, and it wasn't that they weren't all of like mind, at least at my house, everybody would have felt pretty much the same way. So in a sense, that's a fair and easy conversation to have, except still it's one where you're all sitting there spitting vile at a topic that makes you angry. So why give Christmas dinner to that? But when they had all left, we started to kick it around. Gingerly, you know, softly, but very quickly, deliberately and angrily and amazingly. You know, I mean, Trump just conjures up so many superlatives, and you just find yourself wondering, how is it that this is happening? And then I pick up the Chicago Tribune today, and I see the voice of the people. And this is a letter written to the editor that is in today's Chicago Tribune. You may have seen it, too. It says Trump supporters. Donald Trump has been characterized. This is from Mark Quinn of Naperville. He wrote, Donald Trump has been characterized as demagogue on the perspective pages of the Tribune and as a bigot, or worse, in other organs of the media. The Sachems of the press and of the political world clearly see Trump in this light and are scratching their heads at the very notion of his popularity. Why do so many middle-class voters support Trump? Are Trump supporters, as much of the press is doubtlessly concluding, a pack of benighted morons who don't know what's good for them? As usual, the media and political sages have it wrong. People support Trump because they are fed up. They are sick and tired of terrorism, street violence, and a society seemingly coming apart at the seams. They are appalled by a feckless foreign policy that has gotten us nowhere but deeper in debt and further into the cauldron of Middle Eastern intrigue at the cost of trillions of dollars and thousands of lives of their sons and daughters. They have had it with paying even higher taxes so that the government can seemingly remain at the beck and call of every stratum of society but theirs. Most of all, they are fed up with the fealty to political correctness and the blind allegiance to Republican and Democratic doctrine that creates and exacerbates the problems that are permeating our once great nation. And finally, middle-class voters know that any solution that comes from the Democratic or Republican establishments will involve spending lots of their money to sink us more deeply into the morass that the career politician mindset has largely created. People aren't, as media mavens and political pros suppose, stupid. They realize that Donald Trump is far from the perfect vessel for addressing the problems that politics as usual have created. But they know that a vote for the same old Washington nabobs is pointless, or worse. So obviously that's an intelligent person with a vast vocabulary who is going to vote for or supports Donald Trump. And the last sentence, you know, it's funny because as you read along, you go, well, I understand that people are upset about taxes and our feckless foreign policy, or, you know, pick the point that's making you upset about America. I get that. Who doesn't, right? We all have our buttons, and maybe a lot of these ring true for you. But what would be worse? And this letter answers this question in its last sentence. What would be worse, Hillary Clinton or Marco Rubio or somebody else running the United States with the tried and customary political process, or Donald Trump? Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, or Donald Trump? And if you think that Donald Trump is better going to address these issues, I'm sorry for us all. You know, Trump is articulating the things that make everybody upset, but he hasn't articulated his solution except that he's going to kick their ass because he's the best person that's ever been. And I understand you're being upset with the political process the way it's been practiced all these years, but really, how does somebody conclude that, as he said, he might not be the perfect vessel for addressing their problems? That's the understatement of the year. Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face, right? So that's Mark Quinn's letter from Naperville, Illinois, to the Chicago Tribune today. And that is not the conclusion we came to at my house. 2 o'clock hour, Peter Landesman is the director of Concussion. You may have seen the page one story in the Chicago Tribune today about the movie and the interview with the actual doctor that worked for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They didn't interview Bennett Omalu or Will Smith, who plays him in the movie, but they talked to the former doctor for the Pittsburgh Steelers, around which a lot of the movie is set. Fascinating story in the Tribune today. It's a pretty good movie. You know, I saw it and interviewed the director. You'll hear that conversation in our 2 o'clock hour here on WGN. And also just a quick note, a shout-out of sorts to Larry Lujack, the passing of Lujack. He suffered from esophageal cancer. A lot of us who grew up in the Chicagoland area listening to radio can still hear his voice in our heads. You know, when you're 16 years old, the music that was on the radio then will stay with you for the rest of your life. And if you grew up listening to great radio in Chicago when you were 16 years old, those voices that were giving it to you are forever in your life, too. At the time, I was listening to WGN Radio because my parents listened to WGN Radio because that was the law. So you had Wally Phillips in your head. And isn't it interesting that Wally Phillips was one of the greatest communicators in the history of our medium, working at the same time as one of the other all-time greats just down the dial? So there was Larry Lujack and there was Wally Phillips, both doing their things. Wally Phillips was one kind of broadcaster, Larry Lujack was another, and there was room for them both on the AM dial. And they battled it out. And at the time, we didn't even think about that. We just thought, that's the radio. You know, we listened to the radio. We were listening to a couple of titans, the likes of which you just haven't seen squaring off in a long time. Larry Lujack was a biology major in college. He started working at a local radio station because he had a good voice and because he needed some money. And then he started to do little-time radio, small-town radio, and eventually found himself at WLS, WCFL, and WLS in Chicago. He did something called Animal Stories, which came about because, according to Wikipedia, WLS was still receiving farm magazines long after they went into rock and roll in 1960. Lujack started reading some of them and began airing stories from them instead of reading the grain reports connected with the farm report. When the Farm Report was discontinued, the feature became Animal Stories. A perfectionist about his work, Lujack would review every word he said on the air after each broadcast by listening to an audio cassette skimmer tape, which would record only when the microphone was open. He retired in 1987, shortly after his son John, from his first marriage, died in an accident. He moved from Palatine to the outskirts of Santa Fe. He was an avid golfer, and one year when the temperature was 27 degrees below zero and the wind chill factor was minus 75, this was January 23rd, 1985, he played a full 18 holes at a Buffalo Grove golf course. The temperature was 27 degrees below zero, January 23, 1985, played 18 holes, came in and collapsed. He died December 18th of esophageal cancer. And his voice is still in my head. If you know it, you say it, you go, snot-nosed little Tommy, this is your old Uncle Air. It's 227. We'll catch you up on WGN Radio News in a minute. Everything I just told you about Larry Lujack is true, except for the date part. You know, that was a couple of years ago in December that he passed away. And I was looking, you know how sometimes stories move up to the top of a queue in some columns, maybe because people are revisiting it. I don't know exactly how it happened. But the Lujack story was on the top of a search engine or two I was looking at. And so then I started to go down that rabbit hole and didn't double-check the death date. And my wife said, I thought he died a couple of years ago. And I said, I thought so too, but no, it's here in the top of my queue. So all nice reminiscing and all good stories, but all about 2 years dated. So don't worry, you didn't go into a time lapse or rabbit hole. I did. And now I'm back and not doing the news, which is a good thing, right? It's time for WG. Is this for Matt? He says, I got confused by it earlier this week, too. The Tribune put it back online for some reason, and people started passing it around on social media. Thank you, Griff. Thank you, Matt. And I thought, oh, wow. Well, then I've got to tell some stories. Thank you, Veronica. Ben Cortez, our engineer, just told me that Larry Lujack remains dead. He did not come back to life during the past newscast. And we'll keep you posted on that throughout the afternoon. So let's do this. Now, The Mincing Rascals is a weekly podcast that we post both on WGNplus.com, and then it's on my Facebook page. And if you subscribe to it, it'll pop up in your phone. It can be in your podcast. You can listen to it each week. It features Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, as well as Eric Zorn, the columnist, and Kristen McQuarrie, who is one of the editorial writers. She's on the board of editorial writers for the Chicago Tribune, and she's a sometimes columnist there. And we talked about a few things. Obviously, we talked about presidential politics and Donald Trump, but we also spent some time talking about Ted Cruz. And we got to that part of the conversation when we were talking about the Democratic debate. Remember, Hillary Clinton had to take a pee break. I guess the men's room was right around the corner at the Democratic debate, but for the women, it was a 2-minute walk each way. So Hillary was gone, and when she finally got back, it was a little conspicuous and embarrassing. She said, I'm sorry. Kristen McQuarrie picks it up here on WGN.
Some of those debates have been 3 and 4 hours long, and you're drinking a lot of water. And she made a joke during the first debate because she got behind the podium right as they came back.
Right, right.
And she said,
right.
It takes me right. a little longer.
And so Trump, you know, if you want to be mean and cruel, make a joke about it. But
right.
to choose disgusting, the word, you know, I don't want to go into the details, it was just disgusting. It's just bizarre.
What did he think was happening in there? I think she peed. That's not disgusting.
Isn't it? Can you believe we are talking about this, though, about
well,
a front runner for the Republican Party?
I just want to go back, though, to the schlong thing. I'm torn between taking the high road, ignoring it, not giving it, you know, the dignity it doesn't deserve, and not giving Trump what he wants. And then the other side is, no, this deserves a full court press. You know, probably nothing in between. You either need to go, like you said, Kristen, all CNN about it and say, oh, my God, this is outrageous and we're not going to bleep it. Stand by. But really call him out for the pig that he is. Or maybe you should just fight it with silence. And I've chosen to do the former, not the latter.
I think we're beyond silence. I think people tried silence.
But I also think that, you know, you really can't be neutral or wishy-washy about this. You really have to either, if you want to vote for him and he's speaking your truth, then God bless you. But everybody else, I think, needs to call it what it is and sound the alarms, because this is, like you said, Steve, almost frightening, except that he won't be the nominee and won't be the president and will fade into obscurity.
He will not be the president. If he is the nominee, whoever the nominee is needs at least 54% of the female vote to win. And I think this kind of commentary, and I don't even consider myself a feminist. I'm very, you know, anti-PC. My Twitter handle is Statehouse Chick. I get a lot of flack for that. But this, in combination with what he said about Carly Fiorina's face, in combination with just all of his boorish behavior, it will peel away voters who are right-leaning like myself and who would normally probably vote for a Republican nominee.
I said here a week ago or a couple weeks ago, I don't feel that confident anymore. I mean, we were so confident he would never win the nomination, you know, and now I think if people had to pick, he probably is the favorite. I mean, it still might not happen, but I'm not willing to rule out that he wouldn't win the presidency just because it's so freaking weird. It's all so freaking weird that I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Well, Ted Cruz is now number two. Ted Cruz posted a 90-second long commercial for his campaign. It's his Christmas campaign in the country. There he is with his adorable little daughters and his lovely wife, and they're sitting on a sofa, and he's reading them Christmas stories, and they are all tongue-in-cheek puns about Obama health care or, you know, people not working or whatever the platform planks are for the Republican Party and Ted Cruz. But it's his daughters in it, and they're lovely little props. So the Washington Post editorial cartoonist ran a piece where he is grinding the organ, and the little monkeys out front are adorable, and they are his daughters. And they pulled that cartoon down, and Cruz is outraged that they would use his daughters, which are always off limits. I don't know, Steve, what do you think about this?
I think Cruz's outrage is going to last through the convention. He is loving this.
Yeah.
I also think the cartoon was absolutely wrong. And she should not have put that cartoon up, even though, you know, the cartoon
is... Fair to say he started it, though, right?
Well, she says, look, he kind of waived the rule when he put his kids in a political ad. You know, candidates are always appearing with their families in ads. And, you know, this one was a little more than just a I love my dad sort of thing. You just don't, they're 6 and 8 or something.
Right. It's not like they're Chelsea's age and they can make a decision if they want to support their mom's campaign or Trump's kids' age.
It was bad form and she should have known better. The editor should have caught it. I think Kristen knows more about the safeguards there. But man, Cruz then talked again the day after and he's just so hurt. You know, it's like you can take me on. That's part of the game. I signed up for it, but you know, leave my little girls out of it. He's loving it.
You can't handle them anyway. They're better than you.
Oh God.
I think it is true though that of all of the things that are off limits in our politics today, both parties have sort of respected the line with the kids, with Sasha and Malia and Obama when there was some pushback because they were wearing pouty faces at some
turkey party or something. Yeah.
And there was a member of Congress, chief of staff to someone, Facebooked about it and criticized them, and she had to resign.
Right.
And Chelsea, I mean, was going through puberty when her dad was in the White House, and there was still an off-limits tone, I think, with her and her braces and going through that awkward age. So I think it was tasteless. It's the one little area where we have agreement, I think, that kids are off limits.
And you know what else was really telling about that cartoon that or the commercial that Cruz put up was, and John, you're right, I don't remember all of the titles, but one was, you know, the Grinch who gave us Obamacare, or, you know, so they were all plays on that. And one of them was the speaker, the incredible melting snowman, or the speaker of the snowman watching melt in front of your eyes or something like that. So here's Ted Cruz taking on the Republican speaker in a paid political advertisement in Iowa. I thought that was the most amazing thing of the whole story. I mean, just how much that, you know, he's trying to be anti-establishment and how much the establishment can't stand him.
Oh, yeah, I see that point. But I just felt so bad for his daughters, because even if the ad worked, or even if it was as clever as they wanted it to be, at the end of the day, they have to know, the adults, that those little girls' father is unliked by a lot of people. And a lot of that dislike is going to transfer to them. It puts them in the crosshairs of people's animosity. And I felt so bad for those girls, because they'll either be the object of that, or now they have to deal in a much more personal way with the fact that people hate daddy. And why introduce them that way to us, or to, you know, to whoever his critics are?
Well, and he wasn't, like you're saying, he wasn't just reading The Night Before Christmas. He was taking snarky political days
yes,
with his little girls sitting there having to suffer through such just, you know.
And they had speaking parts, you know, the kids weren't just like backdrop. They then were engaging and laughing, and one of them said some funny things. And
well, I'm just glad the two of you are taking on Ted Cruz, because he signed up for that, because it's just not fair.
Was it ironic that the year Donald Trump pulls out of the Miss Universe pageant, Steve Harvey and the Miss Universe pageant completely dropped the ball?
He tweeted that. I mean, yeah. He said,
if I had been in control of this thing, that wouldn't have happened. And I thought, how do you control Steve Harvey's voice? All-powerful Donald Trump, maybe we should elect him president.
Actually, they did screw up a few years ago when Donald Trump was still in charge. They had to take the crown back from somebody.
Donald. I think it was Donald.
He actually wanted
it was Ivanka. But, oh, God, my heart just really went out to poor Steve Harvey. He handled it as best he could. He apologized numerous times. He asked the audience, you know, please don't take this out on the girls. This was my mistake.
Right.
Oh, what a horrible.
I'll tell you, if you watch the video, too, him slinking off the stage
yes.
with the final conclusion with his shoulders bowed is the saddest, longest walk mankind's ever seen. It was just tragic. I was talking to my son Griff about this. He's 23 years old, and he said, you know, the real weird thing is that we're even talking about a Miss Universe pageant. That's why when this first went down, my gut observation was, if I'm Steve Harvey and I realize I've just given it to the wrong person, who gives a...
right.
Who's going to correct me?
Go with it, because it's not like anybody's denied a fruitful life or, I don't know, the wrong person's president or emperor. It's a Miss Universe thing. It doesn't matter. It's silly. Perez Hilton is voting on this. I mean, who gives a poop?
So they call him on it, just say, you know, hey, I thought I had final say, you know?
It's like some of those competition shows on TV where we all vote, but we're not sure that we trust the producers. They go ahead and put on there who they want anyway. So that was part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. And again, you can easily find it on Facebook. I'm King John on Facebook. A link to it is always there. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals on iTunes. We post them every Friday. This week we did it on Wednesdays for the holiday schedule. So next week's podcast of the Mincing Rascals will drop on Wednesday. Then we'll go back to our usual Friday posts. Update you on WGN Radio News at the top of the hour. This is John Williams. In the next hour, Peter Landesman, the director of Concussion, is our guest. We'll go through the Vibe Score segment where we take a look at the various news stories some of our listeners have been following and how they've scored certain questions on that. The boys from The Beat will talk a little bit about sports with us as well. The Bulls win last night's getting a lot of attention. I didn't know that was such a big win for the Bulls, but they sure did win last night. There was a story in the New York Times a couple of days ago, and it was interesting because at the end of the year, you know, they have all of these year-in-review things about everything. We didn't used to have these so much before the internet, but now it's so easy to collate data, generate lists. We're all about lists now. So you've got these. And one of the ones that did catch my ear, and I is a little different this year, was what they skipped this year. And then they went to various celebrities and they said, okay, look back at 2015. Everybody was talking about or doing X, but you just could not get on board. And I'll go through the list for you, but I'm wondering if you'd share me your same. Like, everybody is doing this, talking about this, wearing this, watching this, being this, and you just feel left out for some reason. What was it? What is it in 2015 that you just could not get on board? And then some of the people that are talking about this are famous, and some of them are not. It's less important who says it as much as it is to me the things that they're just citing. So I'll go through the list that way. The Caitlyn Jenner interview and the Caitlyn Jenner phenomenon. I talked about that a lot on the radio this year, but I'm not a fan of hers, and I don't understand how that thing has any staying power. There was a lovely picture of her in the paper this week, and she just looked beautiful. But I couldn't even bring myself to reading the caption. I just went, oh, there's Caitlin, and she looks great in a dress. She's always glammed up, it seems, and I was not a fan this year. I guess I got into it, but more by profession than interest. So the Caitlyn Jenner interview and phenomena, some people couldn't get on board. Mad Men, the final series and episode, some people said Tidal, the music service. There's plenty of them out there. And I remember when that launched, and it was a big deal, a lot of celebrities behind it. But I couldn't find myself getting any more interested because you're right. I already know how to get the music I want to get. I don't need another service. The Affair. This is Debbie Mazar, the actress, and she said about the TV show The Affair, I watched the first couple of episodes, and I thought everyone was nuts. I didn't understand why I was supposed to like the British girl. It wasn't resonating, and it was like, oh, great, let me just sit here and watch my husband and watch people cheating on each other and being happy about it. That doesn't sound productive, said she. That show got some attention. And some of the acting was good, but I didn't like any of the characters. And you know how you sometimes launch into a show and then you finish it because you've already invested that amount of time? That's how I felt about The Affair. Hoverboards, tasting menus, items that people were into this year, but maybe you couldn't. The TV show Empire. This is interesting. Cynthia Nixon, the actress, said about this, Hamilton. I'm the number one theater junkie, she said. The idea that I haven't seen Hamilton yet is nuts. People want to talk to me about it, though, and I'm like, I haven't seen it. And they're like, what? And I'm just too busy. My oldest child has seen it. He plays me the songs. He explains the plot to me. She's not into Hamilton yet. You almost feel conspicuous if you haven't been. Others have said Empire. The Apple Watch. I'm not into all of that gadgetry. And yet that got a lot of attention this year, and the people that were into it were really into it. And if somebody has an Apple Watch, you will know it because they've shown it to you. Marie Kondo craze. Somebody said, a designer, I skipped the Marie Kondo art of tidying up phenomenon. It's kind of how I roll already. I make tons of stuff, but my life motto is, if your heirs won't fight over it, we won't make it. We've practiced just a tiny bit of the Marie Kondo craze, the art of tidying up. She's a woman who had a book out a couple of years ago, and it's continuing to generate a lot of press. She's got her followers. She wants you to live your life a certain way. She wants you to fold your clothes in a certain manner. She wants you to get rid of anything that's excess. She doesn't want you to have storage to hold things. She says if you've got a storage locker and it's got other stuff in there, clothes or whatever, in fact you should be getting rid of that stuff. It's like religion. You need to subscribe to her belief set. But if you do, and if you fold your socks, shirts and sweaters the way she does, your life will run more efficiently. I'll tell you what, the idea of getting rid of a lot of that clutter you're carrying around that you still have in your closet, those shoes that are in a box in your closet that you'd never wear, and they're always kind of nagging at you. It's a great feeling when you just get rid of that stuff. Put it in a car, drive it to the charity place, you donate things. The art of tidying up. Somebody said, go set a watchman. Yeah, I understand that. Game of Thrones. Gail King said, I haven't seen one episode of Game of Thrones, and I'm wondering if I'm missing the boat there. Gail, you are. John Slattery, the actor, said, news about guns. It seems like every time I turn on the television, there's another shooting, and they go, oh, it's not the guns, it's the people with the guns. So I find that issue at this point somewhat intractable, and therefore I tend to avoid the whole conversation. Good for you, John. We probably should. And Donald Trump said a lot of people was something that they saw happen in 2015, and they refused to participate in that dialogue. We're coming up on WGN Radio News, and then, as I said a little while ago, in the next hour, we'll talk with the director of the movie Concussion. Peter Landsman's movie is getting about 3 stars based on the few of the critics that I've been looking at. I thought this movie was going to come down a lot harder on the NFL. And maybe when you see it, you'll conclude differently than me, but I thought it was going to be scathing and ruthless. I thought that the NFL was going to look worse. You almost wonder. And a couple of people have told me, well, they thought that maybe the reason the movie isn't tougher on the NFL is because the NFL had something to say about the production of the movie itself. But as you'll hear in the next half hour, Landsman said they had zero involvement and input. Whatever, the movie is what it is, and I thought it was going to have bigger teeth than it does. But the story of Bennett Omalu, the doctor, is a sweet one. And Will Smith, I think, really nails the part. And maybe that's part of the problem with the movie. If they were just going to do, you know, the intrepid doctor against the NFL, maybe it would get more into that. But it also tells the Omalu story, what he was like, his personality, perks and traits, his love story. He meets a woman, they fall in love, she becomes his wife. And so that's a lot for the movie to try and accomplish. On the one hand, it's one good layer, maybe on another, but I think each of them suffer for the other's presence in the film. And I really thought this was one that was going to turn the tide on the public sentiment about the NFL, or at least try to. And he'll tell us that that's what he's trying to do. But I just was disappointed, to be honest with you, in the fact that the movie didn't even go after them more vigorously than it does. Still, the story about how the movie got made is a fascinating conversation. That's coming your way after the news here on WGN. Thank you, Veronica. This calendar I'm looking at is addictive. It's at slate.com. And it's a calendar just like a grid, you know, all the months, all the days, and then little pictures of news events all around it. You click on the date, and it tells you something good that happened on that date. I just clicked on May 7th. What was a good thing that happened in the world last year on May 7th? It was when Eddie Rosario, a rookie, came up to bat in the major leagues and saw the very first pitch of his career and hit a home run with his whole family in the stands. What a sweet
That's kind of cool.
Oh, what a great thing. You know, it's not a cure for cancer, but that's a swell thing. In fact, I was at that game. It was really fun. So that's kind of cool. Let's see. Let's do Ben's birthday is April 16th, right, Ben? So I'll click on April 16th. Chimps upend gender norms is the headline. So maybe not as fun, but here's what they said was cool that happened on your date, Ben. They did research and they find that female chimps use tools more readily than male chimps, and so it upends the gender norms.
Do the female chimps actually ask for directions too, or?
You know, this is what I mean. Some of the good news on these dates is a little thin. I mean, that's the best we can do for a whole day in the world. But
I want to cross my fingers that mine will say someday, world peace attained.
Well, let's see. You said May 22nd,
uh-huh.
Right? I'll do one more of these and then more of them later on. But you want to roll the dice on May 22nd? Exceptional responders provide clues to cancer treatment. I looked at this. They say there are some people when they do a drug test for cancer, and some people respond well, some don't. And then some people, it's like it about cures them. They are these exceptional responders. And if we can figure out what about that person made that drug so effective, maybe we can find out how to make it effective for other people. And it tells the story of some people who try an experimental drug, and it's like perfect for them. They are called exceptional responders. And there is a story about that on your birthday.
Well, that's cool. I'll take that.
World peace, it's not, but it's a beginning. It's also about 10 after the hour now. So this is part of a conversation that I had the other day with Peter Landsman. His movie is Concussion. There's a neat story on the front page of the Chicago Tribune today about that movie and about actually the doctor that worked with the Pittsburgh Steelers in real life and how true the movie was to his story, which he said was actually pretty true. My first question for Landsman was, how did this movie come to you?
You know, my producers, Ridley Scott and Janina Scott, had optioned that GQ article that featured Bennett. And I had known since these stories, you know, for the previous few years where football players were vanishing, dying, committing suicide, jumping out of moving vehicles, it just seemed like a strange silent epidemic that I was aware of. But it wasn't until I heard the story of Bennett Omalu, who Will plays in this movie, that the whole thing was synthesized for me into a comprehensible narrative.
I saw that GQ article, but that came out in 2009, right?
Correct. You know, it's a funny story. When that article did first come out, it was actually sent to me. It's a strange thing. This movie used to be at HBO, and Oprah Winfrey actually used to be producing it. And they had offered it to me then, and I came to them and asked them if they understood what a story this was, how big this was, and they didn't really quite get it, and they let it go. And then it came back around to me via Ridley, completely unconnected. It was really... it's kind of a wonderful moment.
Well, it's just interesting to those of us on the outside. We hear stories about how scripts languish or go from producer to star to director back and forth for years. And you think, my God, this is a gold mine.
First of all, look, I'm an old war horse journalist. You know, I was a war correspondent. I was an investigative journalist. Those are the stories worth telling, right? The stories that people don't want told are the ones that really need to get told. But I also knew that there was a zeitgeist moment coming up. I felt like this issue... we've been reading about it in the papers. The NFL was getting battered. Players were getting more vocal. And then this, I heard the story of Bennett. And, you know, look, I did have a kind of damn the torpedoes point of view on it, but I also knew I had a studio and I had producers who were felt as strongly about it as I did. So I knew the odds were good.
Interesting, too, that while that's a great story in and of itself, maybe the NFL's reticence to address an issue and we're all watching the Gladiators, we love football, right? That's one good story. But then Bennett Omalu's story is really charming too, isn't it?
They're both good stories, and that's the thing, is they both can be good stories. I'll tell you my story. I was on the way back from New York last week, and I stopped at Los Angeles, the airport, and in a corner of my eye, I saw a TV in one of those Chipotles playing some sort of throwback football show about, you know, the 80s and football. And there was Joe Washington playing for the Colts, who was popular when I was watching a lot of the game. And I was transfixed. It was ballet. It was spectacular. It was military. It was heroic. And I was like, I turned to my wife. I said, you know, this game is so damn beautiful. And yet, what's also true about it is it kills people. So it's all true. Football is great, and the story of Bennett Omalu is irresistibly great.
Have you been drawn then to this issue beyond making the movie? I mean, what do we do about this?
My kid's 12 and wants to play. He's not playing. I mean, look, here's the reality. This movie, this issue is about information. Now we know. Now we know that if you play football for a number of years, there is a very large risk of this disease consuming you later in life. If you play professional football, more often than not, you're probably going to be facing some sort of fate, you know, in the hands of this really terrible... and people have to understand what a really terrible disease this is. This is not headaches. This is you looking in the mirror and no longer recognizing your own face, no longer knowing the names of your children, no longer being able to not hit your wife. It is brutal, and then you frequently end up in some sort of suicidal clench with yourself. So, yes, I take this very seriously, as should everybody else, when they decide whether or not they're going to play or even watch, for that matter.
Do you think we fans are somewhat complicit in the equation?
You know, that's a decision that everybody has to make for themselves. Will Smith and I actually had this conversation just a couple of days ago. Both of us are huge football fans, and yet neither of us have watched a single down of football this year. And it's not like we made a decision. We just have been drawn to other things. I would not ask or tell people what to do. We can only make decisions for ourselves.
Timing is interesting, isn't it? I mean, you had in the New York Giants game this past weekend, a guy deliberately and continuously go for the head of an opponent, and then they break for a commercial, and there's the movie.
You know, what the game is. I don't know why we're surprised. It's like going to watch Gladiators duke it out in the Coliseum and surprise when somebody draws a knife and cuts the Achilles heel. It's like, look, if you're going to strap on pads, put on that helmet, if you're one of the best athletes in the world, the biggest, strongest, best trained, you're going to go for it. I mean, it is what it is. It's like Mike Tyson. You know, we watch him beat the crap out of people in the ring, and then we're shocked when he commits a crime outside the ring. I mean, you know, that's what this is. It's we got to embrace it and accept it and just take the hypocrisy off the table.
I've been a Bears fan for years. One of the characters in your movie is Dave Duerson, a real Chicago Bears football player. His family this week has said they think you've conflated too much in his character and they resent his portrayal. What do you say about that?
You know, look, I have two things to say. One is I have enormous compassion for that family. I actually called Alicia Duerson and asked her to come see the movie. I feel their pain. If you watch the movie, Dave Duerson actually, by the end of it, commits a heroic act, which is an act of self-martyrdom. He kills himself because he's so consumed by this disease, but he does it in such a way that he shoots himself in a part of his body so he can preserve his brain, so his brain is given to science because he knows there's something wrong with his mind. You know, the movie embraces that act of heroism. I also know, as an old journalist, that nobody on planet Earth, nobody, likes the way they're portrayed in anything. So there is really no way to do this well. I hear them. I feel them. I feel very comfortable with the way I have portrayed him. I think it's an honest, powerful, emotional piece of filmmaking when it comes to him.
The piece in the New York Times this week has quoted you as saying that the Durasing character is a metaphor.
Not a metaphor, but there's a metaphorical value to his character because, you know, look, after he was a ferocious player, and when he retired, he made a wonderful transition from which is hard to do for professional athletes, went from playing to civilization. He put on a suit. He joined the NFL Players Association as head of their disability committee. But among players, if you ask them, he was notorious for denying anybody any kind of disability for any reason. And he kind of got a Dr. No label on him. So I found that kind of fascinating, then only to reveal that he's been suffering from this disease for years. And maybe his ferocity and his deniability is partly because of the disease he had. And then at the end of the day, for him to kill himself because of the disease, to me, that's a Shakespearean.
How ironic is that? It's beyond ironic.
Ironic and sad.
It's Shakespearean.
Yeah, ironic, sad, metaphorical. Look, it's terrible, but it's also true. It's undeniably true. It's painful, but it's real.
I get that, and I don't want to dwell on this point. I think there every year is a movie or two where we learn that directors can take license, and so what you're watching in a film might be emotionally true, but it might not be chronologically true. It might not have every I and T the same as happened in life.
And look, a feature film is different than a documentary, and yes, different from a Wikipedia entry. We go to movies, we pay $14 and get a bucket of popcorn to have an emotional, powerful, transformative experience. We don't go to get information.
And one last question. What about the NFL's involvement in this movie? I was surprised to see that, you know, there were logos, stock footage. The NFL is so protective of its brand. Talk about the relationship you had with the league in making the movie.
We were able to do that because we had no relationship with the NFL. We didn't ask for permission. We didn't seek to license anything. I went to my studio and my producers and said, look, this is what I want to do. I want real footage of the movie. I want logos. I don't want to make it up. I don't want to be Any Given Sunday with some fictitious team, because that's not going to get people going, and it's not real, and it's not powerful. I want to go for it. And they backed me. They said, you do what you need to do. We feel that we're protected legally, and if they have a problem with it, they can reach out to us. But, you know, the truth is they haven't. So clearly they know this is an undeniable thing to do. And when people see the movie, they'll understand it. Also, because there's a lot of fantastic football in the movie. It's not all bad stuff. It embraces what's beautiful about the game. So for them to try and stop us would really, really blow back in their face, I think.
When did you know Will Smith was going to be that good?
You know, he's one of the great artistic instruments of our time. The guy is so deeply talented. I always knew he had this performance in him. I didn't have a moment of doubt, and neither did he. It was something we worked on together and really found together. But he's an extraordinary performer, and I think it's one of the great performances in many years from any actor, no less Will.
That may seem a little hyperbolic, but then again, it's the director of the movie, Concussion, Peter Landsman. By the way, Slate, I'm just looking at their site today, has this posted. They say, Concussion is a bad movie in weird and confused but rarely interesting ways, written and directed by the former journalist and based on a great 2009 GQ article. This script's been floating around since 2009, or idea anyway. Concussion is a movie that knows exactly what it's about but doesn't seem to understand why it's about it, or for whom, or what reason it exists. If its goal is simply to present history, it does a lousy job. Slate's Daniel Enber has already pointed out a number of the film's factual inaccuracies, and if its job is to offer a withering indictment of football, it ultimately does a lousy job of this too. And particularly in that case, I agree. Back to the first point, though, about it being factually not true. He said, you don't spend $14 to get information. That's a quote. We don't go to get information, we go to the movies. I guess we shouldn't, but we do. I don't agree with that statement. We don't go to the movies to get information. We go to be entertained. He said you go there for something that's emotionally true. But when it's about real-life people whose families, anyway, are still alive and watching it. And the whole city of Chicago knows Dave Duerson and the story. And America knows some of this football story. Why do you have to change it to make it more emotionally true? I've never appreciated that about movie making. I know they do it. I know they get to do it. We're all suckers if we come away from the films thinking we now know something we didn't. We have an emotional truth, whatever that is. But when we sit around and talk about it with our friends, we'll say, well, Dave Duerson, this or that. I saw it in the movie. It's about the real thing. And they go, well, actually, that wasn't true. And you come away not knowing truth, the ultimate truth about the truth about these stories. I suppose if he were still in this conversation, Landsman would say, well, you know, the ultimate truth, the emotional truth. But we already knew the emotional truth. We knew that football is dangerous and bad and that these guys play it. I disagreed with him a little bit on his dismissal of how complicit the fans are as well. I think the fact that you and I are cheering them on, like almost it must have been for the Roman gladiators, means we're part of this equation. We can't divorce ourselves that easily of what you and I have to do about this as well. Maybe you saw the movie. The number, or let's see, maybe you haven't seen them. Maybe you have. Maybe you have. My number is 312-981-7200. We need to take a break. This is WGN. Let me go back. Veronica is getting ready for WGN Radio News. This is John Williams. Calendar of the very best things that happened in 2015. Shoot me another date, Veronica.
Let's go June 11th.
June 11th. Sometimes they need a little clicking through. Iceland legalizes blasphemy. This stuff is quite random. I'm not even going to click through on that. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, and I'm not sure that's...
That's my son's birthday, and you know he's just sarcastic enough that he would like that.
Good. Well, then I'm glad that you have that. Here's my birthday, October 19th. High school dropout rate has dropped dramatically. Kids are staying in school and getting their diplomas. Well, that's good news. Give me one more date here.
Let's see. October 13th.
This is like the Wheel of Fortune. Let's spin it and see if the big wheel stops on a good day. Justin Trudeau's cabinet is 50% women with a great range of age and experience. See a video of the Attorney General's father telling Trudeau's father his daughter wants to be prime minister. People have pointed that out. Trudeau's cabinet, 50% women. It's a much more diverse-looking cabinet than anyone any American president has ever had. What's today? Let's see here. I'm on November 8th. We'll click on November 8th. The Obama administration quietly instituted a transgender revolution. And when I click through the story, it goes to a Washington Post story that says, years before the White House was lit in rainbow colors, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision to legalize same-sex marriage, President Obama used a routine bureaucratic tool that ended up significantly changing the government's understanding of gender and how it can be changed. And then it goes on to talk about this particular instrument that the president used and the fact that his is more gender-friendly. So there's just another one. It's all at slate.com if you want to click through and see if you can find something on their calendar of the best things for 2015. Frankly, I'm a little disappointed in what I'm getting here. It's a... Time for WGN Radio News, and then we'll go to the Vibe Score segment and talk about sports with the boys from the beat on WGN. Veronica? Thank you, Veronica. Are you a fan of this song, Veronica?
It's okay. You know, I guess I've just heard it too many times.
That's kind of where I am. Let's listen to it for a few more seconds. Give me full gain on this one, Benji. You know, when I hear this, I think of houses where the lights match the music. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. It's almost a little too fast. My eyes can't keep up.
Those are pretty funny, the houses that match the music with the Christmas carols that play. The story of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve Sarajevo, that's the song we're listening to, was featured in a CBS Morning News piece this past week, and they said it is now the number two most listened to, I think, Christmas song. It's the second most downloaded or listened to Christmas song in the world. All I Want for Christmas Is You, Mariah Carey, I presume is number one, and that's number two. So we posted it on that app that I've got called VibeScore. And on Saturday afternoons when I'm on it this time, we go through some of those stories we've been posting. The hook is that at the end of each story, you're asked a scorable question on a scale of 1 to 100. How much do you love the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's Christmas Eve Sarajevo? Veronica, if you had to score that, 100 is you, it's your favorite song of all time. What would you give that one?
I'm going to go with 80.
80?
Yeah.
I'm probably a 75. The vibe score on it is 65. Did you see the viral video where Jimmy Fallon and the Roots all did an a cappella version of the Star Wars theme?
Yes. Hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Hilarious.
Was that clever, too? I mean, I think my comment on it, because when you go to VibeScore, when you use the app, you can download it, get it on your phone, and then you'll select different subjects or categories that you want to follow. It could be viral videos, it could be sports, it could be comedy, whatever. Anyway, so this is in the viral video section, and then you can comment after you scored, and my comment was, nobody appreciates the medium of television more than Jimmy Fallon. I mean, you could go on and talk about it, laugh about it, but his use of TV is so creative. They had like a Brady Bunch box set on there, you know, the Brady Bunch. So it's three rows, it's, you know, of three each. And they've got the Roots dressed in Star Wars garb, and one of them's Darth Vader. And then sometimes they have the masks off. But anyway, they're doing this version of the Star Wars theme. I'm not doing it any justice now describing it. It was very funny. It was very clever. And it's got a high vibe score. 89 is about as high as our vibers give anything. We asked you about the Miss Universe pageant. We let you vibe score this one differently. We said, should they have given it to Miss Colombia or Miss Philippines? They gave it to Miss Colombia at first, but that was wrong. It should have gone to Miss Philippines, right? So then they changed their mind, and they gave it to Miss Philippines. Who should have gotten it? I said, you should have just let Colombia keep it. Don't tell anybody about the mistake. No one would be the wiser.
Yeah, who would rat on them?
I know. It's just, what is it? Steve Harvey's got the little cue card there. They said that maybe the teleprompter was wrong. I was being a little flip about it, but anyway, it got a 19, meaning that most people felt that what they did was right. I was in the minority on this one.
I just hope that Miss Columbia gets her 15 minutes after all that happened to her.
I don't think you want to mess with the Colombians. Do not get the Colombians mad at you. I just finished that TV show Narcos. Holy cow, you do not want the Colombians angry at you. We asked you for your vibe score on Donald Trump this week after he blasted Hillary Clinton by saying she got the S worded by Barack Obama. Actually, that's the SCH word by Barack Obama. His vibe score is a 17. If 100 is we love the guy, he's getting a 17 right now. And that's about where he's been since we've been asking for a couple of months now. Have you seen David Lett? If you're in the follow the category of celebrities, we posted a picture of David Letterman's face. Have you seen the beard that he's sporting now?
No, I'm going to have to look it up.
It's troublesome. It almost is the kind of call for attention that people sometimes exhibit when they're not well. It's this full, huge, grizzly Adams, unshaved beard.
Oh.
It's like maybe he's got that for a movie coming up, or maybe he just is trying to be funny. He needs attention. I know I'm overanalyzing it, but it's weird. It's not a good
look. Oh, my gosh. I just saw it. Ooh.
Okay. 1 to 100. What do you give the beard?
I'm going to go with about a 12.
Yeah, that's about right. Sorry, Dave. It's pulling a 31 right now, and I don't know how it's that high. Eggnog popped up in vibe score this week. 1 to 100. What's your vibe for eggnog? I think that's a love it or hate it for people.
I hate it.
I'm in about a 10 on this one.
Yeah, I mean, 10 would be high for me because just
the only reason I'm giving it a 10 is because maybe you're enjoying it and I'm happy for you. But that's the only kind of enjoyment I get out of eggnog.
Otherwise, you're pinching your nose shut and swallowing if you have to, unhappily.
I don't like the feel of it.
No.
The look, the consistency.
Nope.
We posted a bunch of holiday movies on VibeScore, if you follow the movie category. We asked you what your vibe was for Love Actually, which I think is just terrific. I watched it again last week, and I just cried. It's getting an 86 right now. Are you up on Love Actually? Is that in your holiday repertoire?
Nope. I'm a little behind on that.
You can watch that one. You'll thank me when you do. Jimmy Butler called out Hoiberg, the coach, for not being tough enough on the Chicago Bulls. We asked you if you agree with Butler. 100 would be, yeah, absolutely. They need their butts kicked a little bit. And it only got a 59. I thought more people would agree more vehemently with Butler that the Bulls need a tuning up, verbally or otherwise. That's the sort of thing we post on VibeScore. You follow different categories. A news feed comes in on those groups. And you're asked to score things and then see how your score and comment compares to others. Donald Trump, 17 this week, which means he can't ever go below 17. VibeScore is one word, by the way. VibeScore, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. And you can get it for free at the App Store. As they say, get your fun on. By the way, there's one other I want to throw at you. Andy Mazur's getting ready for his show this afternoon. Hi, Andy Mazur. How are you?
John, how are you doing today?
I'll give you one more. Good, thanks for asking.
All right.
Here's one more VibeScore question. It's a sports one. Should they legalize FanDuel and DraftKings? Mm. Attorney General Lisa Madigan says that, in fact, her ruling on it is that's gambling, it's illegal. And while that doesn't make it illegal, her ruling on it is that it's illegal gambling. And technically, if it's gambling, it's therefore illegal. The only way to make it legal would be the state legislature would have to pass an exemption, the way they do, say, for the state lottery or for casinos. They'd have to, you know, by law, allow it. Should we legalize in Illinois FanDuel and DraftKings? I guess at the core of that question, Andy, is it gambling or is it a game of skill? Where are you on that one?
Well, you know, it's kind of a little bit of both, but it's gambling in the sense that, you know, if there's money changing hands and obviously you're playing for a cash prize, I mean, that goes into the whole, you know, the debate, like you just said. It's a very gray line between the lottery and the casinos that are making the state money and FanDuel, which is probably not making the state money.
Well, it seems to me like the lottery is pure guesswork, right? That's just chance.
Yeah, that's chance.
But if you bet on the horses, that's gambling. We agree on that. That's gambling,
right.
But it's legally. And there's a certain skill to me in that if you're smarter at it, you work more at it, you have not even an intuition, but just more knowledge. You're smarter about horse racing than I am. Then you have a little bit of an advantage. I guess my point is the fact that there's some skill involved doesn't change the fact that it's still gambling. So even if you're smarter about the NFL and the players and how they'll match up, it's still gambling. They say, therefore, it's a game of skill. It's not chance.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know the outcome of a game.
And you don't know who's going to get hurt. You don't know, you know, obviously, if a guy's not going to play in your lineup that week. And I think that the weird thing about the FanDuels and the DraftKings and those kind of things are just the fact that, you know, they're so ambiguous as far as, you know, that they had that whole scandal. One guy from FanDuel was making bets on DraftKings, and the other way around, it was a lot of insider trading going on there. So I think they're probably trying to figure out exactly what these companies are all about and if they're, in fact, on the up and up. I mean, they're spending a ton of money in advertising. Every commercial in the NFL is for one of those two.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
And the fact that one of the companies would allow their people with that sort of proprietary information to use it to gamble on another site that's like Coca-Cola employees having stock in Pepsi.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that they allowed that. You know, I just wouldn't. And I don't know why. I get a little exercise about this topic, and I don't know exactly why, because it's no skin off my nose. If you all want to lose your money, that's your business. And if you win some, I'm happy for you. It doesn't seem to be hurting me in any way. But I think it sure looks like gambling to me.
Yeah. Sam Panayiotis just walked into the studio as well. I'm sure he has a thought.
John, are you okay with the Illinois lottery? You walk to the gas station, you pick four numbers, and if you win, you win a lot of money. You okay with that?
Andy, it looks like I'm being attacked right
now. Yeah, okay. No, I'm just asking. It's not
just
a question.
Just help me out on this.
Honest question.
Well, yeah, but you it sounds like you think I think that FanDuel and DraftKings are bad or wrong.
No, I'm just starting it up.
Okay. Well, I think sure that's gambling. What was your question about me going to the gas station again?
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah.
You like four numbers. You wake up one morning and you think, I like
I'm gonna
seven.
Bet on those.
I like 12. For some reason, I like 18. And, hey, 35.
Boom.
And you play those four numbers and you win three out of the four and you win. I mean, that's gambling, right?
Absolutely.
So why can't people – I'm not asking you. I'm asking why people can't pick quarterbacks that they like or pick receivers that they like or pick a defense that they like. Essentially, it's almost the same thing.
No, I think it is. I don't have a problem with people doing it, but I have a problem with it's fans saying it's not gambling because it's gambling.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know then what happens once we decide it's gambling, except it's a vice. We'll probably tax it more. But I don't have any problem with that either. Who cares? If I was, though, a big player of those games, I'd probably resent the fact that I don't trust FanDuel or DraftKings. Do you trust them to run on an honest and open organization?
Well, not after what happened there. I mean, with the fact that they were allowing their people to bet somewhere else. And, you know, it's kind of a gray area because you really don't know exactly where your money's going, what your money's going to. Are you going to get the exact payout that you're supposed to get? Are they going to raise their fees? And is there legal ramifications for that if you want to debate them? I mean, it does seem kind of not on the up and up, but then again, they have all this money because they're advertising everywhere.
They need regulation.
That's the thing. I mean,
you need somebody to come in there and police it the way it should be policed, make sure nobody is illegally crossing T's or dotting I's. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, we know that this guy's not playing, but we're not going to tell you. You know,
we had a computer glitch. Oh, we didn't get you putting in Alshon Jeffrey or taking him out because he's not playing. I
mean, that's insider trading.
Exactly.
You can't have that anywhere. Yeah.
And I'm not on a high horse about this because I'll tell you what. I don't gamble. I don't know nothing about sports. Even if I was a gambler, I wouldn't do that because I'm just not good enough at it. But there's nothing that makes the NCAA basketball tournament more fun than having some money in a pool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those of us who are like, I'll just throw in, I'll fill out my bracket. Damn, you're engaged. You really do care about that 12-5 matchup. You know, it makes it a lot more fun, doesn't it?
And that's where skill goes out the window.
No kidding.
No idea.
That's chance.
The skill is pick the 12s to beat the 5s,
yeah,
Andy.
Good point.
If you're smart, you at least know to do that. Did you guys watch the Bulls game last night, by the way?
I did.
And what did you think of that game, Andy?
You know what? It was about time that we got an effort like that from the Bulls. And I'm surprised that it took a tongue lashing by John Paxson to get them to play a little bit harder.
Do you guys think that the officials in the NBA are calling traveling a lot more this year? It's been like a pet peeve of mine. did I ever send you the leak, Andy, of Dwayne Wade where he takes 8 steps?
Oh, yeah.
And they actually show you that he catches it like at the top of the key, but he walks into the reception of the pass. So it's like 2 or 3 steps. The way they do, they'll take that extra step when they catch it, and then he pivots. And then he pivots again, but on the other foot.
Wait, so you mean they call less traveling? You mean less traveling because it seems like they don't call it enough.
Oh, well, that's been my complaint all these years. I think they're trying to call it more now, but I think they're getting it wrong. They'll do it a lot of times when guys are loading up a shot, and it's this petty little travel. It's a bugaboo for me, but I think they're calling it more often, but that they're not calling it in the right spots.
See, I saw DeAndre Jordan catch a pass. This was probably a week ago, and one of the highlight shows digitally added like a hopscotch surface, and they showed his feet moving from, you know, 1 to 8, and he actually he shuffled both feet, which you can't do.
And he picked up the rock on the way back, too.
And now I see some guys, like, they pick up their dribble at the 3-point line, and then they're at the rim, and it's somehow that's okay.
Well, and I think the officials are so interested in body contact and are you slapping the guy's arm, hand, or wrist as he's shooting the ball, they forget to look at the feet. But there's 3 of them out there, right? It's so glaring sometimes. And so I thought there was this memo where they said, okay, we're going to crack down on that and settle the John Williams of the world down. But I don't think they're getting it right.
The old point of emphasis.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, really, Andy, for me, If you gain an advantage by traveling, then that's a problem. If you shuffle your feet a little bit just as you're loading up the shot, I'm not real bent out of shape about that. Mm-hmm. But if you're if in that fast break dunk you took an extra step, or if inside the lane you're traveling as you try and get better position to put it back up, they should call that.
See, for you, it's the traveling. For me in football, I don't know what a catch is anymore.
Yeah, nobody knows what a catch is.
I have no idea, John, what a catch is. If it's, you know, can it be juggled before the catch? Do you have to completely press it toward your chest? Do both feet have to be in at the same time?
Does your third foot have to be in down?
Does the elbow count as an extension of your hand? I don't know these things.
Does the ground cause a fumble?
We learn new things every week in the NFL.
And don't you hate it when they take away from the athleticism of the players?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Maybe he bobbled it or juggled it, his knee was down, but that looks so good, and that was such a great effort. I would prefer them defer to the player's catch rather than use the video to take it away, right?
Style
Are you
points,
with me on that?
Style
no more
points
challenges,
instead of taking it away. Yeah.
Take all those red flags away.
Well, that's a funny thing, too. So I was at the Bears-Vikings game, and where there is any kind of a review, you are impressed with how long the game just stops. Well, you know, and nothing is happening. That's old school for you guys. I mean, you've gone to games for years and years and covered them up and down. But for me, it's like, wow, this must be hard on the players. They're just standing there waiting.
Yeah, the worst thing about that is, too, because they don't have enough music to cover it. I mean, Jay Giles' freeze frame only lasts as long as it does, you know? I mean, they got to get some new music for that.
But you know what my favorite part of the game was? And I don't know if they do this at Soldier Field. Again, I saw the Bears play in Minnesota. They did a thing at, must have been halftime. They did these little bitty kids, you know, like Pop Warner, 10-year-old and 8-year-old players. And they played another team of mascots.
Oh, cool.
So it's, and they had like 10, 12 mascots out there, great big foam mascot guys. And then they played a game of tackle football, and the mascots were making plays. They were tackling the kids and pushing them down and not letting them score. And it was hilarious to see, you know, a giant Taco Bell thing knock over a little bitty kid.
I believe his name was the Great Nacho.
Yes, it was.
I actually saw the game. Yeah. One of my friends, Dan Katz, flew in. He was the head coach of the mascot team. And this is some sort of a tradition now in Minnesota where around the holiday season, they select a team of, I think it's fifth or sixth graders.
Yeah.
To play the mascots. And the mascots actually lost this year.
Yeah. I had the Nacho guy in my DraftKings lineup too.
But they're, like you said, John, they're grown men. In these mascot outfits.
I know.
And they're running full speed. I think one of the mascots drop-kicked one of the kids.
He did. And then they do like a little dance over the kid. You know, they do the taunting thing. To see a 12-foot taco taunt a little kid football player.
Kid's never going to eat a taco again in his life.
Really an exceptional moment in any sports fan's life.